He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Sunday evening by, well, it's Sunday night, by you guys. We haven't done one of these in a while. It's been kind of busy. There was the trade deadline, and then there was the, well, there was the Luka trade, and then there was the deadline. And there was the Mark Williams trade, and then the Mark Williams trade didn't happen. And then now we've been kind of getting settled into this idea that Luka Doncic is a Laker, which has taken some time. And then finally, we arrive here at this place where the Lakers are starting to look like the team that they're hoping to look like. And we finally can kind of catch our breath here on a Sunday night for the first time in a while. And I want to have a conversation with you. I want to be able to break down this team with you. So I asked my Twitter following, and you can find my Twitter right there, at Anthony Irwin LA, if you would like to subscribe or not subscribe, follow me there. I asked for some questions there, got some questions. I know I'm going to get some questions from the live audience as well, so I'm going to answer as many of those as I can possibly answer over the course of the show. Looked into the iTunes mailbag, didn't see any new questions there. So, if you guys want to add some questions there, then you guys can do that. That is always the quickest way to, the quickest way to, answer or get your topics on the show without like paying for them here or whatever. So, yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in. Before we even dive in, though, the Lakers tweeted out the post-game the post-game speech that J.J. Redick gave after the Lakers beat the Nuggets. And one, like I said this to Harrison afterward, I went back and I rewatched the game. And it really jumped off the screen how kind of shell-shocked the Nuggets were at the amount of belief the Lakers had that they could beat them. No matter whether Denver went on a run or whatever, the Lakers just kind of handled it, handled their business, and kicked their ass. And the Nuggets were like, wait, what? This is not what you're supposed to be doing to us. And and it was just like, it was wild to watch that. So in a second, I'm going to replay or play the you know, that clip as well. A quick reminder before we dive fully into the show, please hit that subscribe button, please hit that like button, and then share the show. Tell your friends and stuff, Lakers fans, that we're doing this thing over here in the Lakers Lounge, and we're having a good time doing it. And then if you have some enemies or whatever, tell them that, hey, here's the show. It's not even that good. And we'll see if you can kind of reverse engineer some interest in that show or whatever. So we can dive on into the show now that I've gotten that out of the way. Oh, also, if you guys are listening to this in the form of the podcast, which a lot more of you guys are doing, according to the numbers, please hit that subscribe button and then leave those 5-star reviews. That stuff really, really helps. And yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in, starting with JJ's speech, which I found really cool. So let me set the scene really quick. The Lakers just beat the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets had beaten the Lakers something like 14 out of the last 16 times that the two teams have played. At one point, it was like 13 straight. They had the Lakers number, and it's for a variety of reasons. Like, I got into it a little bit with Lee Ellis on Basketball Passport earlier today, which, by the way, check out that show too. YouTube.com/@basketballpassport is where you can find that show. But Lee and I talked a little bit about like the matchup between the Lakers and the Nuggets when AD was on the Lakers, and how like it specifically is a bad matchup in that case because the Lakers' either best or second best player gets kind of wiped out completely by Nikola Jokic, and that completely alters a team's identity. And in this case, Jokic is still really good, but if he wipes out Jackson Hayes, it's like, oh, shucks, you wiped out Jackson Hayes. And last night, with the way that the Lakers were defending Nikola Jokic and the way that they were kind of able to fully minimize his impact on the game, that's, and again, when we talk about like the way that the Nuggets looked shell-shocked, it really felt a lot like the way that the Lakers looked when AD was kind of minimized, and Jokic had no idea how to handle that situation, how to handle the physicality up and down the court, and how to handle all of the length and athleticism and the key that the Lakers were able to present him. And he just kind of folded, and then the Nuggets eventually folded with him. So really, really cool to watch that. JJ Redick said after the game that he hadn't slept because of this matchup. And, you know, he devised this game plan. He and his coaching staff devised this game plan, and the Lakers fully bought into it and executed it to the tune of an absolute beatdown of the Denver Nuggets. And this is what JJ said after the game.
This morning we talked about going to war. Be willing to die on the court. All right, I was so amped today. I should have been able to take a nap. I couldn't sleep last night. I was up till 5 a.m. I couldn't even nap today. Pre-game, I'm laying on the floor doing my breathing exercise. I'm envisioning what our team is going to play like. And you guys went even higher. You went even higher. And frankly, our conviction and our belief in the game plan, the bench was great. Everybody contributed. Luca, it's good to have you back.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have you back. First team all defense. First team all defense. Rui, Vando, Doe, Bron, all you guys that were primarily, you were on three possessions, whatever. Everybody that was on Jokic was awesome tonight. That was great. Last thing, talk all season long about our belief and our conviction, okay? Hope that was fun. If we play that hard for the rest of the regular season, we're going to be just fine. That should build your belief. It built my belief in what we can accomplish, all right? It was awesome. Let's go.
We got all three, man. 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
So the first comment, or one of the comments I'm saying down here, by the way, let's see, Jazz Singh, did you not see, or do you not see my super chat? I don't, it's not on here. I'm not seeing it. So whatever you sent either yesterday or today, that I didn't get to, just copy and paste it, put it in here. I'll answer it over the course of the show. But another comment that I see here is from Law Malcolm saying that JJ Redick is a podcast coach. The thing about podcasting and the thing about coaching is it's all about communication. Like, so much of leadership, management, just like the position that JJ Redick holds, it really comes down to communicating your ideals and your values and the things that you think you need to implement over the course of a season. It's all about selling those things, right? Like, I'm going to, you know, my kids, when they grow up, I'm going to tell them, like, I want you guys to work a commission job at some point in your life where the amount of money is fully dictated by how well you are able to sell a product. Because at the end of the day, that is the most important skill set that you need to build over the, like, in this society that we live in. Can you sell? I worked all of my jobs over my lifetime. You know, when I was growing up, I guess not an entire lifetime, but I worked in sporting goods sales. I worked in shoe sales. I worked in suit sales. I worked in golf sales while I was trying to build out this career that I have now. And all of them were commission jobs. And I actually get really bored when it isn't a commission job, because it's like every hour is worth the same amount of time. And I would much rather work fewer hours and squeeze more out of those hours by way of commission sales than just like sit there and like milk the clock. And I was kind of like that. I took a lot of those skills that I built as a salesperson into coaching. And then I took those skills as a salesperson and a communicator into PR. And then I took those skills as a communicator, as a salesperson, and then as like in PR, the my favorite thing in working in PR was like understanding people en masse. So like sales is all like, usually it's 1-to-1. And then coaching, it's like 1-to-15 is the like size of teams that I was coaching. And then when I was working in PR with the types of clients that we had, it was like 1-to-however-many-thousand, you know, that were tuning into whatever type of event that we were trying to put together or whatever. And then, like, you know, fast forward to podcasting, and it's 1-to-millions, right? It's however, you know, I've been really fortunate over the course of my career where Locked On Lakers, we had X number of millions per year downloads, Silver Screen and Roll. I was able to build that from, you know, 750,000 or so downloads in the first year to about 3 or so million in the next year. And then, for some reason they laid us off and then gave me the feed. And then we've been able to rebuild it back to where it was before. And like, all it comes down to is like selling stuff. Like when I'm podcasting to you, I'm selling myself to you, my analysis of the Lakers, my reporting on the Lakers, the guests that I bring in, the conversations that I have. This whole channel is just a matter of sales. And JJ Redick is to the nth degree better at podcasting than I was or than I am. And the fact that a former basketball player, somebody who like guys are going to relate to in that way, are able to like turn around and see this guy like figure out the X's and O's of basketball on the fly, the way that he has as a coach. And then also he's able to implement those skills as a communicator, as a podcaster, as Law Malcolm is putting here. Like, yeah, he's a podcast coach. I don't think that's a knock. I think it's a strength. Like the number one thing that the guys that the people that I spoke to who were in the locker room last year, or the people who were like in their camps over the course of the year last year, the number one thing that those guys had a problem with was Darvin Ham's communication. How sometimes they would be playing in this role, or some other times they'd be playing in this role. Sometimes they're starting, sometimes they're not. And there would be no communication on when their role would be changing, or why their role would be changing, or what they could do to get a bigger role in the rotation. It was just nothing like that. It was just any given day. It was like, I guess I'll play 15 minutes tonight. Oh, I guess I'm not playing tonight. Oh, I guess I'll play 25 minutes the next night. And it like all like the Lakers last year were just losing their mind, pulling their hair out of their head, trying to figure out the fuck they were supposed to be doing under Darvin Ham. And then you fast forward to where they're at right now with JJ Redick. And you saw that clip and how he talked about belief And he talked about all these things and how, like, you know, he really wants to hammer home in that moment, coming off of probably the best game that the Lakers have played so far this year, how important belief in his game plan is. And yeah, so like, he's a podcast coach. Yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't care what Pat Riley came off of the sideline, or Pat Riley came out of the booth to coach the Lakers. Communication really matters, man. And the fact that like JJ Redick is this good, this quickly at such a crucial part of coaching, the basketball, like, understanding and stuff like that, that's going to come, especially if the Lakers like are able to add even better assistant coaches to his staff. Like, that's all going to get figured out too. Starting with being a great communicator and getting that belief and instilling his kind of values and identity on the way that the Lakers are playing, that's where it starts. That's how you lay a foundation. And sometimes being a podcaster really helps in that regard, because it you've honed this skill of communication and you implement it, and the guys just kind of buy in as a result of it. All right. I'm going to go into my... where are they? Here they are. Here we go. All right. So on Twitter, I asked for questions. Got 14 of them. So I'm going to answer these in the order that I received them. J_Fade started us off with, if Jackson Hayes can be effective as he was yesterday in the playoffs, you think there's a chance the Lakers get priced out in trying to bring him back next year? Possibly. I don't know that his like salary would jump so high that the Lakers have no chance at keeping him. I think I would kind of flip the way that I'm looking at this, and it's like, if the Lakers are able to turn Jackson Hayes into, in this hypothetical, a playoff player, and they're able to do so through LeBron and through Austin, obviously through Luka, creating for that center, and then by also surrounding that center with a whole bunch of really good wings, big physical wings that can also do stuff on the offensive end too. Like, if they're able to make Jackson look like this, then like, I think you can make another center look like that. You know, I think Jackson is fine. I think he's kind of like the definition of a replacement level center. So like, if Jackson Hayes signs for some inordinate amount after a really good playoff run, you congratulate him, and then you like, and you get to work immediately on converting whatever next center that you go out and get. And remember, the Lakers, I reported this at the time, and then I reminded you guys a little while ago, the Lakers were getting ready to draft a center in last year's draft, and didn't wind up drafting a center because Dalton fell to them. And you know, that obviously is one approach to it, where you get, in that case with the Lakers, they weren't a lottery team, but they were a mid-ish, late-ish first round pick, or they were in that kind of realm there. And for what they were thinking was that, like, all right, we'll just see if we can reproduce what happened there with Derek Lively in Dallas. Then Dalton fell to them, and they weren't able to go about it that way. But I think, though, if Jackson is able to become like a viable playoff player, then I think the Lakers can turn any number of players who have similar skill sets into that kind of playoff performer. JLP asks, sorry for the dumb question, but how is Tuesday's game not a nationally televised game? Well, look, I don't think that that ESPN obviously knew that this was coming. This has been funny, because on Twitter, people are like, oh yeah, well, Anthony tweeted out that the deal, as he thought, was not true, or it wasn't. It's like, yeah, find any number of people who like we're going through that. I spoke to people who work for the Los Angeles Lakers to ask about that deal to try to confirm it, and they were like, no idea. And so like ESPN also was like, in trying to plan for this game up here, it's like, how is it not? And you could try to flex it. The problem is Tuesday games are TNT, and TNT already has games lined up, I believe, which they have. No, it is. They flexed it. So JLP, they already did. So Tuesday, the first TNT game is going to be Cleveland against Orlando. And then the second one is Lakers Dallas. So it's I believe they did flex that one. I think originally, it was going to be Phoenix Memphis would be the late night game, but Phoenix sucks. So, but according to the schedule I have in front of me here, it is going to be on TNT. And then also importantly, and I say this as often as I can, if you can watch that game on Max and look at the difference in picture quality that you see there. It's the same, like same announcers, same presentation, all that stuff. It is in 4K. And it looks so much better. So, yeah, check that out as well. All right, NY Soul writes, if you were Rob, who would you go after this summer to solve the holes, including the center spot, if anything? Well, if the Lakers are able to, so rewind back to last summer, LeBron was willing to take a little bit less so that the Lakers would be able to go out and get like a Klay Thompson or a James Harden or a DeMar DeRozan, or again, hilariously, Jonas Valanciunas. obviously, it didn't play out that way. And, you know, he didn't wind up taking, he did take a bit of a pay cut so that the Lakers could go into the season under the second apron. But he didn't wind up taking the kind of pay cut that like maybe he was willing to, because there was just no need to. I was told a few weeks ago at the deadline, if the Lakers, and this was after the Luka trade, I started asking around. It was like, it's not to say that you guys are planning for this, but you know, kind of talk to me a little bit about like LeBron being willing to take a little bit less again this summer if he opts out, because the Lakers, I believe they already have the chance. Like the name of this episode is with Luka Doncic, LeBron James, Lakers can absolutely win a championship this year. And I'll talk about that over the course of the show and make my case as to why. But if they already feel that way this year, and then they can go into next year and LeBron takes a little bit less so that the Lakers would maybe have access to their mid-level, maybe not their full mid-level, but like a mid-level exception, then you use that money on a decent center. And then look, like if Rui doesn't play up to expectations and the Lakers make the decision to like trade Rui and Gabe for a Nick Claxton in you know, coming out of Brooklyn and basically like improve that position to the nth degree, then maybe that's a direction that they go. But I do think though that like it is that would be a you know, the first thing that they would look to do is like, all right, let's see what type of resources we can allocate towards improving the center spot compared to where we're at right now. So I think that's one thing that they would do. The other thing that they, I think, would look to do is continue to add more wings. We have seen the benefit of great wing play dating back to the 2019-2020 championship. And then, you know, you see it now where the Lakers were able to make Nikola Jokic, who was having arguably the most impactful offensive season ever, and they made him look completely hapless out there in that game Saturday night. And I think that has a lot to do with wings. So now it's going to be tough because everybody is finally coming around to something we've been talking about on my various platforms for years as to like how valuable wings are. But if that's something that the Lakers are able to add, after, like we've seen merely trading for Dorian Finney-Smith, the impact that that has had on this Lakers team, the Lakers, I think, are going to, like, there's no way they can miss that lesson again. Having seen how it's played out, swapping out D'Angelo Russell for Dorian Finney-Smith, like, keep the wings coming. Just give me all of the wings. And now you have Luka, who can handle creation. You have LeBron, who can handle creation. You have Austin, who can handle initiation and creation. Like that's where it's at right there. Like you got that part of it solved, the initiation and creativity on the team. Now go out and get me point of attack type 3-and-D defenders. Give me bigger 3-and-D defenders who can handle the Kevin Durant, or not can handle the Kevin Durant, but give you a better shot against those players. Give me the 4-5 type wings who can guard up or down, but can also rebound and knock down open shots. Like, give me all of those kinds of players. Give me all of them and see where that gets you, because I've been saying it for years. You go back over like all of the champions. Maybe one day I'll do that. Maybe like at some point I'll pull up the list of champions and the teams that they beat and the wings in those series. And you'll see that like for the vast majority of NBA championships over the years, it's been wing play that wound up solidifying that champion. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon. And fortunately for the Lakers, in Luka, they have like a top one wing, to be completely honest. So he's the best in the world at that position. And good Lord, like, he's only going to get better. All right, we did get a super comment, which means I get to play this bad boy. I'm also going to take a sip of water because my voice is starting to go. I went out and played golf today for the first time in like a couple of years, and all of the allergens just... All right. let's go ahead and Justin Tindall writes, one in the loss column from second in the West. Yeah, and the team that currently sits second in the West is a team that the Lakers just smacked up and down the court Saturday night. So I really believe, should I just do that? Should I give my take on why I think the Lakers can win a championship this year? Yeah, let's do it. So literally a segment ago, I talked about the importance of wings and how a lot of times it's wing play that decides the winner of any given series and then eventually any given championship. And this year, the Lakers wing rotation is, I'm going to escalate for dramatic effect. But you have Jared Vanderbilt. You have, well, at the bottom, you have like Cam Reddish. And then you have Jared Vanderbilt. And I guess you have like Dalton Connect. And then you have Rui, and then you have Dorian, and then you have LeBron, and then you have Luka, right? And I don't know how many teams out there can match up with that level of wing play. Boston has great wings in the two Jays, right? Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Phoenix has a great wing in Kevin Durant, and then another one in Devin Booker, but there's such a mess everywhere else that they don't appear to matter. Golden State did address their wing issue, and they essentially swapped out Andrew Wiggins for Jimmy Butler. And in the playoffs, that's going to matter. The Mavs had great wing play because they had Luka Doncic, and they basically swapped him out for a big, which, fine, like, that can be. Like, I watched that Mavericks and Rockets game, AD's first game, and the Mavericks absolutely swallowed up the paint. And that's another approach here. But you look at their wings, and it's not inspiring. It's not very good at all. Jokic kind of makes up for the fact that they don't have creation on the wing, but you do still have Aaron Gordon, who's an elite. He's shooting like 43% from three-point range this year, and he's elite defensively. And then on top of it, you have Michael Porter Jr., who I think is a bit of a loser. But if he has it going, I don't know what you do against Denver defensively. And so, like, you have that kind of wing role play on that side. Now, you look at some of the other teams here, and this is, like, one of my concerns with OKC, is Jalen Williams is really bleeping good on the wing. But outside of that, it's kind of iffy. Shea is great. Chet Hartenstein is going to be great as role players there. But, like, between their iffy wing play and then, like, how often they might just go cold, I don't think OKC is the buzzsaw that statistically they appear to be. And look, maybe I'm wrong because the stats are really, really loud. But I don't know. Like, as we're recording, I haven't checked back in on the game. Okay, OKC wound up beating Minnesota, but like Minnesota was right there with them for the entirety of the game. And, you know, again, like it's just, I would like OKC a lot more if they had, more wing depth, that like two way wing depth. So the Lakers here, like the starting point for why I believe that the Lakers can win a championship is because so long as Luka and LeBron are healthy, and then so long as, you know, Rui knocks down open jumpers and Vando continues to like muck things up as a wing, and Dorian Finney-Smith knocks down open jumpers and is good defensively, like that is a stellar wing rotation. And there aren't very many teams that have that at their disposal. The other part of this too is that like playoff basketball is so different from regular season basketball. And the fact that over the course of a 7-game series, the Lakers are going to have LeBron James and Luka bleeping Doncic working together to crack whatever code any team presents them in any 7-game series. And all you got to do is beat that team 4 times out of those 7 games. At least offensively, the Lakers are going to figure out every team that they play against. And that is a pretty good feeling. And then outside of that, it's like, I don't see a buzzsaw out there. Boston was that last year, but they have come down to earth a little bit this season. OKC statistically looks like a buzzsaw, but again, I got into why I'm not as nervous about them. Had they traded for like Cam Johnson, I'd be like, it's just not going to happen this year. That's a perfect team. But they didn't. They chose not to. And I don't know. If I were a Thunder fan, I might regret that a little bit. Now, you kind of look elsewhere, like Milwaukee, Cleveland, they look pretty good. But again, like on their wings, it's more role players than you know, stars on the wing. Now, like Donovan Mitchell is 100% a playoff performer, and that size that Cleveland has is really kind of concerning. And if anything, that makes me really happy that like Boston doesn't just get to waltz to the finals this year. They're going to have tough matchups there in Cleveland and in Orlando and maybe a little bit in Milwaukee. But for the Lakers, like I see championship potential in this team. And that Luka LeBron combination is only going to look better over the course of the season. And at the stage that is at right now, they beat the piss out of the team that absolutely had the Lakers number the last like 5 years or so, not five, like 3-4 years. And that felt like a very different win. That felt like a culture setting win. And nobody would agree with me more than this dude.
This morning we talked about going to war. Be willing to die on the court. All right. I was so amped today. I should have been able to take a nap. I couldn't sleep last night. I was up till 5 a.m. I couldn't even nap today. Free game. I'm laying on the...
I also couldn't nap today. all right. Let's dive back into the super chats here. Jazz saying, the Lakers look like a big three with depth, which is impossible in today's CBA. Wonder what AR's next contract is going to be and if the Lakers would pay up. That is a great point, Jazz. The notion that in this league, having three stars on a roster is basically impossible because it becomes really difficult to fill out your roster after that. So essentially what you have to hope for is that like you have two max contract type players and then one player who is waiting to get paid. And in this case, the Lakers have LeBron, Luka as their two max contracts. And then you have Austin who is waiting to get paid. And yeah, that is basically, you know, if you can put yourself in that kind of a situation where you have like max production from a player who isn't on a max contract, like that's the biggest market inefficiency in the sport. And in the Lakers case, they're able to compound that with the presence of two other actual max contract type players. And yeah, like, excuse me, just in terms of the books, the Lakers, they certainly look the way that you would like to build a championship team. Alex Amerling writing, wait till we get a center this offseason, then we'll really be cooking. So the thing about this offseason, there's a lot riding on it. And for starters, yeah, they got to address the center spot. As fun as Jackson has, you know, as good as he was in that game last night and all that stuff, like he kind of tops out at like an 8-9 point center. Like he's not going to have games where he like drops 20 points and 15 rebounds, even let alone like the 40-20 game that AD had in his last game. So it would be nice to go out and get a center who can like change a game on his own. But on top of it, Luka has an extension that he can sign this summer. Austin, after next season, can opt out of his contract and would then be really, really expensive. LeBron will be 41 going into next year. And, you know, we've already seen a little bit of slippage athletically from him this season that, like, next season might be even more. Will probably be even more. So this season, next season, those are the years that the Lakers need to go out and win a championship. And then after like next year, then you kind of regroup a little bit and you see where you stand. But this season, next season, that's the time to go out and get it. It's kind of a bummer that the Williams trade didn't go through, even though I think there was more of a gamble than it was a solid move. Let's see where Jackson gets you. And let's see what kind of centers are on the market after this season. But this year, next year, like you got to go out and get one. All right, let's dive back into Twitter. H Boss Lakers, if we get the two seed, what are the teams from the play-in that you don't think are a good matchup? I'm not too worried about any of the teams that are like at the bottom of the standings right now. I'm going to pull up the standings as they sit right now after all of tonight's action wrapped up. So you have the Timberwolves, the Mavericks, the Warriors, and the Kings as the play-in teams right now. Quote unquote bad matchups there, I would say Dallas first and foremost. That front line going up against the Lakers front line makes me nervous. Like, they are so much bigger up front than the Lakers. But also, like, I think the Lakers can outcreate them. Minnesota is a weird one because the Lakers don't really have anybody to match up against Anthony Edwards. That makes me kind of nervous. Golden State is always going to make me nervous because if Steph just goes absolutely ballistic in like two games that you probably should have won otherwise, then Golden State all of a sudden has the advantage. But like outside of that, like Sacramento sucks, Phoenix sucks, San Antonio Spurs are going to start losing a bunch. And then, you know, maybe like the Clippers fall into the play-in. The Clippers currently sit 31-25. Minnesota sits at 31-27. So maybe the Clippers fall down there, but I'm not really worried about the Clippers. They're crazy deep, but depth doesn't really matter in the postseason. I don't see any other team that could. Like, Houston would really have to slip to fall into the play-in. And I'm just not really worried about, like, right now the Lakers are the 4 seed and the Rockets are the 5 seed. Perfect. The Lakers have home court. They're playing against a team in Houston that is still learning what it takes to be a playoff performer. LeBron owns Dylan Brooks in the postseason. So does Luka. Like, give me that matchup every day of the week. And then also on top of that, the Lakers would then be on the other side of the bracket from the Denver Nuggets. And yeah, you play Oklahoma City in the second round of the playoffs, which, you know, you're going to have to play a good team eventually. I would rather play the Thunder in a playoff series than the Nuggets, even though I'd be fascinated by that chess match. Like, the basketball fan in me is like, yeah, give me the Nuggets. That's a really fun chess matchup between Jokic and LeBron and Luka. But the Lakers fan in me is like, fuck that. Somebody else knocked them out. give me an Oklahoma City team that might go cold in two or three of those games in a playoff series over the Denver Nuggets. But yeah, that's a fun question. And it's really cool that, like, it's within the realm of possibility that the Lakers, who are two games back of Memphis and Denver, that they could climb up to the 2 seed and really well be really well positioned to, you know, go on a nice lengthy playoff run. All right, you guys can hear it in my voice, so I'm going to answer a couple more and then get out of here. Jason Fuentes, love the show. Top two off-season additions. Well, one, thank you, Jason, for the love. Top two off-season additions. So we'll do NBA 25 free agents. All right, so Miles Turner would be fun. I just don't think the Lakers will be able to afford him. He's going to sign for like 30-ish mil a year. Now, maybe the Lakers could sign and trade for him, and that changes things. But, yeah, we'll see. I like, as like a sneaky one, go out and get me Larry Nance Jr. He can knock down corner threes. He crashes the rim hard. He's still an elite athlete. Like, that's a really fun one. Gary Payton, the second, is kind of a fun one. He's a unrestricted free agent and just like point of attack defender. Like, the Lakers could really use that. Now, that said, Gabe Vincent has been fantastic, so you might not even need that kind of a player. Outside of that, like, in terms of free agents, I'm not seeing anybody that I'm like desperate to add. I actually think the biggest Lakers addition will probably be via trade. Maxi Kleba's contract is expiring next year. So if the Lakers could add like a $10 million player using his contract and some draft capital, that would be a fun. Like, so basically the Lakers were trying to do that anyway at the deadline. But the problem was, like, you know, Robert Williams makes a little bit less or a little bit more than Kleba. And because Kleba was acquired when he was, the Lakers couldn't aggregate his salary, which meant that they couldn't go out and trade his salary and another salary to go out and get Robert Williams. But this upcoming summer, they will be able to do that. And at that point, you could combine Kleba's contract with like Dalton Kinnick's contract plus draft capital. And that's like a $15-16 million player that the Lakers could go out and get at the center spot, and basically add him without messing with your rotation. That'd be perfect. That would be exactly what I'd be looking to do. All right. Let's go with, I'm going to try to see some of the free comments in here, because I don't want to make it feel like the only way to talk to me is to pay. Yeah, this is funny. Joey Lynch, I want to see us beat the Timberwolves. That's kind of a fun one. That would be a fun matchup. I think Gobert is a fraud and will always be a fraud. So, like, the idea that the Lakers could kind of play him off the court by completely ignoring him would just be fun to watch, because I hate that he keeps winning Defensive Player of the Year awards. All right, so let's go to the next one. All right, here's a good one to end on. At Navineeth Raj M1, hey Anthony, does the Luka trade absolve the Lakers front office of all the past screw ups? Are we no longer holding them accountable for trading away the 2020 championship team, letting go of Caruso, signing, trading for Westbrook, and for hiring Ham? No. No, I don't think it does. And I know there are going to be people who are like, oh, come on, you just don't like Rob, or you just don't like the way that the Lakers operate. I don't care about Rob personally. Like, none of what I say about Rob has anything to do with him as a person. Everything that I say about Rob has everything to do with his ability to do the job in the way that he does it, and the way that the Lakers function, where it's like they're getting by doing the bare minimum. And I just don't love that, you know? So, like, the Russell Westbrook trade, we always have to know that they're capable of that kind of a deal. The decision to not just let Caruso walk and pick Talen Horton-Tucker over him, but to allow luxury tax payments to force you into a situation where you had to choose one over the other, like, while you were a championship contender, I'm not cool with that. The fact that, you know, over the last like 3 years, Rob was clearly able to just pull a center out of a hat, as he did with Mark Williams, and chose not to, while he ran out the clock with LeBron and AD. Like, I'm not okay with any of those things. Now, getting Luka makes me feel a lot better about the state of things. And Luka is a great margin for error extender. But if anything, it puts them even more on the clock so that they don't waste another great era in the way that I feel like they wasted LeBron and Anthony Davis. So yeah, like it helps. It makes me feel a lot better about the state of things, but I'm never capable. Like, I'm never okay with just like forgetting some, like, arguably the worst off season in Lakers history. And all of those were you know, like self-inflicted errors. Nobody forced the Lakers to do those things, and they did. And that, like, is always going to stick out to me. All right. I think I am going to end it there. I got a fun one here from Damian Draco. I see it. Damian Draco or Draco. I'm going to go ahead and actually, I'm going to send that to myself on Slack and come back to it, because that's a really fun question. And maybe on a future mailbag, I'll answer that one. But it's been 51 minutes and my voice is going, and I still have a bunch of editing and posting to do. So I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. So without any further ado, thank you everybody for tuning in the way that you do and the way that you did and all of that good stuff. And until tomorrow, so the Lakers play Tuesday. So Monday I will have a guest on. Tuesday, Raj and I will break down the game against Dallas. And then, did I get more? Yeah, I did. Theo, find a way to get Naz Reid, Rui on steroids. Yeah, they could try. I don't get the sense that Minnesota is at all looking to move him, but they also might start looking to cut costs. And if the Lakers are able to take advantage of that situation, then fantastic. He'd be a great addition. But yeah, so until tomorrow, I'm Anthony Irwin. This has been the Lakers Lounge. Thank you everybody for tuning in. Please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please share the show with friends and all of that good stuff. And until the next time you guys hear from me, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.